Chapter 3 Graveyard Blues 1 The head of Castle Rock's three-man groundskeeping crew was named Stephen Holt. So, of course, everyone in the Rock called him Digger. It is a nickname thousands of public groundskeepers in thousands of small New England towns hold in common. Like most of them, Holt was responsible for a fairly large amount of work, given the size of his crew. The town had two Little League fields that needed tending, one near the railroad trestle between Castle Rock and Harlow, the other in Castle View. There was a town common which had to be seeded in the spring, mown in the summer, and raked clear of leaves in the fall, not to mention the trees that needed pruning and sometimes cutting, and the upkeep of the bandstand and the seats around it. There were the town parks, one in Castle Stream near the old sawmill, the other out by Castle Falls, where love children beyond numbering had been conceived since time out of mind. He could have been in charge of all this and remained plain old Steve Holt until his dying day. But Castle Rock also had three graveyards, and his crew was also in charge of these. Planting the customers was the least of the work involved in cemetery maintenance. There was planting, raking, and resodding. There was litter patrol. You had to get rid of the old flowers and faded flags after the holidays. Memorial Day left the biggest pile of crap to clear up, but July 4th, Mother's Day, and Father's Day were also busy. You also had to clean off the occasional disrespectful comments kids scrawled on tombs and grave markers. All that didn't matter to the town, of course. It was the planting of the customers which earned fellows like Holt their nickname. His mother had christened him Stephen, but Digger Holt he was. Digger Holt he had been since he took the job in 1964, and Digger Holt he would be until his dying day, even if he took another job in the meanwhile, which, at the age of 61, he was hardly likely to do. At 7 in the morning on the Wednesday, which was the 1st of June, a fine, bright pre-summer day, Digger pulled his truck up to Homeland Cemetery and got out to open the iron gates. There was a lock on them, but it was used only twice a year, on graduation night at the high school and Halloween. Once the gates were open, he drove slowly up the central lane. This morning was strictly reconnaissance. There was a clipboard beside him on which he would note the areas of the cemetery which needed work between now and Father's Day. After finishing with Homeland, he would go on to Grace Cemetery, across town, and then out to the Stackpole Boneyard at the intersection of Stackpole Road and Town Road No. 3. This afternoon, he and his crew would start whatever work needed to be done. It shouldn't be too bad. The heavy work had been done in late April, which Digger thought of as spring cleaning time. During those 2 weeks, he and Dave Phillips and Deke Bradford, who was the head of the town public works department, had put in 10-hour days, as they did each spring, clearing blocked culverts, resodding places where the spring runoff had torn the old ground cover away, righting tombstones and monuments which had been toppled by ground heaves. In spring there were 1,000 chores, great and small, and Digger would go home barely able to keep his eyes open long enough to cook himself a little dinner and have a can of beer before tumbling into bed. Spring cleaning always ended on the same day, the one on which he felt that his constant backache was going to drive him completely out of his mind. June spruce-up wasn't anywhere near as bad, but it was important. Come late June, the summer people would start arriving in their accustomed droves, and with them would come old residents and their children who had moved away to warmer or more profitable parts of the country, but who still held property in town. These were the people Digger regarded as the real ass-aches, the ones who would raise the roof if one blade was off the old water wheel down at the sawmill, or if Uncle Reginald's gravestone had tumbled over on its inscription. Well, winter's coming, he thought. It was what he used to comfort himself with in all seasons, including this one, when winter seemed as distant as a dream. Homeland was the biggest and prettiest of the town boneyards. Its central lane was almost as wide as a regular road, and it was crossed by four narrower lanes, little more than wheel tracks, with neatly mown grass growing up between them. Digger drove up the central avenue through Homeland, crossed the first and second intersections, reached the third, and slammed on the brakes. "Oh, piss in the shithouse!" he exclaimed, turning off the pickup's engine and getting out. He walked down the lane toward a ragged hole in the grass some 50 feet down and to the right of the cross lane. Brown clumps and piles of dirt lay around the hole like shrapnel around a grenade explosion. "Goddamn kids!" He stood by the hole, big calloused hands planted on the hips of his faded green work pants. This was a mess. On more than one occasion, he and his co-workers had had to clean up after a bunch of kids who had either talked or drunk themselves into a little midnight grave digging. It was usually an initiation stunt, or just a handful of teenage dimbulbs, randy with the moonlight and kicking up their heels. To Digger Holt's knowledge, none of them had actually dug up a coffin, or, God forbid, disinterred one of the paying customers. No matter how drunk these happy assholes happened to be, they usually didn't do more than dig a hole 2 or 3 feet deep before getting tired of the game and leaving off. And although digging holes in one of the local bonatoriums was in bad taste, unless you happened to be a fellow like Digger who was paid and duly empowered to plant the customers, that was, the mess wasn't too bad. Usually. This, however, wasn't a case of usually. The hole had no definition. It was just a blob. It surely didn't look like a grave, with neatly squared corners and a rectangular shape. It was deeper than the drunks and high school kids usually managed, but its depth was not uniform. It tapered to a kind of cone, and when Digger realized what the hole did look like, he felt a nasty chill race up his spine. It looked the way a grave would look if someone had been buried before he was dead, come to, and dug his way out of the ground with nothing but his bare hands. "Oh, cut it out," he muttered. "Fucking prank. Fucking kids." Had to be. There was no coffin down there, and no tumbled headstone up here, and that made perfect sense because there was no body buried here. He didn't have to go back to the tool shed, where a detailed map of the graveyard was tacked up on the wall, to know that. This was part of the 6-plot segment owned by the town's first selectman, Danforth Buster Keaton. And the only plots actually occupied by customers held the bodies of Buster's father and uncle. They were off to the right, their headstones standing straight and unmolested. Digger remembered this particular plot well for another reason. This was where those New York people had set up their fake gravestone when they were doing their story on Thad Beaumont. Beaumont and his wife had a summer home here in town, on Castle Lake. Dave Phillips caretook their place, and Digger himself had helped Dave tarring the driveway last fall, before the leaves fell and things got busy again. Then this spring, Beaumont had asked him, in kind of an embarrassed way, if some photographer could set up a fake tombstone in the cemetery for what he called a trick shot. "If it's not okay, just say so," Beaumont had told him, sounding more embarrassed than ever. "It's really not a big deal." "You go right ahead," Digger had answered kindly. "People magazine, did you say?" Thad nodded. "Well, say, that's something, isn't it? Somebody from town in People magazine. I'll have to get that issue for sure." "I'm not sure I will," Beaumont said. "Thanks, Mr. Holt." Digger liked Beaumont, even if he was a writer. Digger had only gone as far as the 8th grade himself, and had to try twice before he could get through that one. And it wasn't everybody in town called him Mister. "Darn magazine folk would probably like to take your picture stock naked with your old hog leg stuck up a Great Dane's poop chute if they could get it that way, wouldn't they?" Beaumont went off into a rare gale of laughter. "Yeah, that's just what they would like, I think," he had said, and clapped Digger on the shoulder. The photographer turned out to be a woman of the sort Digger called a high-class cunt from the city. The city in this case was, of course, New York. She walked as if she had a spindle up her box and another one tucked up her butt and both of them turning just as brisk as you please. She'd gotten a station wagon from one of the car rental places at the Portland Jetport, and it was stuffed so full of photo equipment it was a wonder there was room for her and her assistant inside. If the car got too full and it came to a choice between getting rid of her assistant or some of that photo equipment, Digger reckoned there would be one pansy from the Big Apple trying to hitch him a ride back to the airport. The Beaumonts, who followed in their own car and parked it behind the station wagon, had looked both embarrassed and amused. Since they seemed to be with the high-class cunt from the city of their own free will, Digger guessed that amusement still held the upper hand with them. Still, he had leaned in to make sure, ignoring the high-class cunt's snooty look. "Everything fine, Mr. B?" he had asked. "Christ, no, but I guess it'll do," he had replied, and dropped Digger a wink. Digger dropped him one right back. Once he had it clear in his mind that the Beaumonts intended to go through with the thing, Digger had settled back to watch. He had as much appreciation for a free show as the next man. The woman had a big fake gravestone tucked in amidst the rest of her traveling goods, the old-fashioned kind that was round on top. It looked more like the ones Charles Adams drew in his cartoons than any of the real ones Digger had set up just lately. She fussed around it, getting her assistant to set it up again and again. Digger had stepped in once to ask if he could help, but she just said no thank you in her snotty New York way, so Digger had retreated again. Finally, she had it the way she wanted it, and got the assistant to work dicking around with the lights. That used up another half hour or so. And all the time Mr. Beaumont had stood there and watched, sometimes rubbing the small white scar on his forehead in that odd characteristic way he had. His eyes fascinated Digger. Man's taken his own photographs, he thought. Probably better than hers, and apt to last a lot longer, to boot. He's storing her up to put in a book some day, and she don't even know it. At last the woman had been ready to take a few pictures. She had the Beaumonts shake hands over that gravestone a dozen times if she had them do it once, and it was pretty goddamn raw that day, too. Ordered them around just like she did that squeaky, mincing assistant of hers. Between her braying New York voice and the repeated orders to do it over again because the light wasn't right or their faces weren't right or maybe her own damned asshole wasn't right, Digger had kept expecting Mr. Beaumont, not exactly the longest-tempered of men according to the gossip he'd heard, to explode all over her. But Mr. Beaumont and his wife, too, seemed more amused than pissed off, and they just kept on doing what the high-class cunt from the city told them to do, even though it had been right nippy that day. Digger believed that if it had been him, he would have gotten a dite pissed off at the lady after a while, like in about 15 seconds. And it was here, right where this stupid goddamn hole was, that they had planted that fake grave marker. Why, if he needed any further proof, there were still round marks in the sod. Marks which had been left by that high-class cunt's heels. She had been from New York, all right. Only a New York woman would show up in high heels at the end of slop season and then goose-step around a cemetery in them, taking pictures. If that wasn't... His thoughts broke off, and that feeling of coldness reasserted itself in his flesh again. He had been looking at the fading tattoos left by the photographer's high heels, and as he looked at those marks, his eye happened on other, fresher marks. 2. Tracks? Were those tracks? Course they ain't. It's just that the doofus who dug this hole flanged some of the dirt further than he did the rest of it. That's all it is. Except that wasn't all, and Digger Holt knew it wasn't. Before he could even get to the first blotch of dirt on the green grass, he saw the deep impression of a shoe in the pile of dirt closest to the hole. So there's footprints, so what? Did you think whoever done this just sort of floated around with a shovel in his hand like Casper the Friendly Ghost? There are people in the world who are quite good at lying to themselves, but Digger Holt wasn't one of them. That nervous, scoffing voice in his mind could not change what his eyes saw. He had tracked and hunted wild things all his life, and this sign was just too easy to read. He wished to Christ it wasn't. Here in this pile of dirt close to the grave was not only a footprint, but a circular depression almost the size of a dinner dish. This dimple was to the left of the footprint. And on either side of the circular print and the footmark, but farther back, were grooves in the dirt that were clearly the marks of fingers. Fingers which had slipped a little before catching hold. He looked beyond the first footprint and saw another. Beyond that, on the grass, was half of a third, formed when some of the dirt on the shoe which stepped there fell off in a clump. It had fallen off, but remained moist enough to hold the impression. And that's what the three or four others which had originally caught his eye had done. If he hadn't come so cussed early in the morning while the grass was still wet, the sun would have dried the earth and it would have fallen apart in loose little crumbles that meant nothing. He wished he had come later, that he had gone out to Grace Cemetery first, as he had set out to do when he left home. But he hadn't, and that was all. The fragments of footprints petered out less than 12 feet from the grave, a hole in the ground. Digger suspected the dewy grass farther on might still hold impressions, though, and he supposed he would check on that, although he didn't much want to. For the time being, however, he redirected his gaze to the clearest marks, the ones in the little pile of dirt close to the hole. Grooves which had been drawn by fingers. A round impression slightly ahead of them, a footprint beside the round mark. What story did that configuration tell? Digger hardly had to ask himself before the answer dropped into his mind like the secret void on that old Groucho Marx show, You Bet Your Life. He saw it as clearly as if he had been there when it happened, and that was precisely why he didn't want any more to do with this at all. Goddamn creepy was what it was. Because look, here's a man standing in a new dug hole in the ground. Yes, but how'd he get down there? Yes, but did he make the hole or did someone else do it? Yes, but how come the little roots look twisted and frayed and torn, as if the sods were pulled apart with bare hands instead of sheared cleanly apart with a spade? Never mind the buts. Never mind them at all. It was better maybe not to think of them. Just stick with the man standing in the hole, a hole that is a little too deep to just jump out of. So what does he do? He puts his palms in the closest pile of dirt and boosts himself out. No particular trick to that, if it was a full-grown man, that was, and not a kid. Digger looked at the few clear and complete tracks he could see and thought, if it was a kid, he had awful damn big feet. Those have got to be size 12s at least. Hands out. Boost the body up. During the boost, the hands slip a little bit in the loose dirt, so you dig in with your fingers, leaving those short grooves. Then you're out, and you balance your weight on one knee, creating that round depression. You put one foot down next to the knee you're balanced on, shift your weight from the knee to the foot, get up, and walk away. Simple as knitting kitten breeches. So, some guy dug himself out of his grave and just walked away, is that it? Maybe got a little hungry down there and decided to hit Nan's luncheonette for a cheeseburger and a beer. God damn it, it ain't a grave, it's a friggin' hole in the ground, he said aloud, and then jumped a little as a sparrow scolded him. Yes, nothing but a hole in the ground. Hadn't he said so himself? But how come he couldn't see any marks of the sort he associated with spade work? How come there was just that one set of footprints going away from the hole, and none around it, none pointing toward it, the way there would be if a fellow had been digging and stepping in his own dirt every now and then, as fellows digging holes tended to do? It occurred to him to wonder just what he was going to do about all this, and Digger was goddamned if he knew. He supposed that technically a crime had been committed, but you couldn't accuse the criminal of grave robbing, not when the plot which had been dug over didn't contain a body. The worst you could call it was vandalism. And if there was more to be made of it than that, Digger Holt wasn't sure he was the one who wanted to do the making. Best, maybe, to just fill the hole back in, replace what flaps of sod he could find whole, get enough fresh sod to finish the job, then forget the whole thing. After all, he told himself for the third time, it ain't as if anyone was really buried there. In the eye of his memory, that rainy spring day glimmered momentarily. My, that gravestone had looked real. When you saw that willowy assistant carrying it around, you knew it was make-believe, but when they had it set up with those fake flowers in front of it and all, you'd have sworn it was real and that there was really somebody. His arms were crawling with hard little knots of flesh. You just quit on it now, he told himself harshly, and when the sparrow scolded again, Digger welcomed its unlovely but perfectly real and perfectly ordinary sound. You go on and yell, Mother, he said, and walked over to the last fragment of footprint. Beyond it, as he had more or less suspected, he could see other prints smashed into the grass. They were widely spaced. Looking at them, Digger didn't think the fellow had been running, but he sure hadn't been wasting any time. 40 yards farther along, he found his eye could mark the fellow's progress in another way. A large basket of flowers had been kicked over. Although he couldn't see any prints that far away, the basket would have been right in the path of the prints he could see. Man could have gone around that basket, but he hadn't chosen to do so. Instead, he had simply kicked it aside and kept on going. Men who did things like that were not, in Digger Holt's opinion, the sort of men you wanted to fuck around with unless you had a damned good reason. Moving diagonally across the cemetery he had been, as if on his way to the low wall between the boneyard and the main road, moving like a man who had places to go and things to do. Although Digger was not much better at imagining things than he was at fooling himself, the two things, after all, have a way of going hand in hand, Digger saw this man for a moment, literally saw him. A big fellow with big feet, striding through this silent suburb of the dead in the darkness, moving confidently and steadily on his big feet, booting the basket of flowers out of his way without even breaking stride when he came to it. He was not afraid, either. Not this man. Because if there were things here which were still lively, as some people believed, they would be afraid of him. Moving, walking, striding. And God befriend the man or woman who got in his way. The bird scolded. Digger jumped. "Forget it, chummy," he told himself once more. "Just fill the friggin' thing in and never mind thinking about it." Fill it in he did, and forget it he intended to. But late that afternoon, Deke Bradford found him out at the Stackpole Road burying ground and told him the news about Homer Gamache, who had been found late that morning less than a mile up from homeland on Route 35. The whole town had been agog with rumors and speculation most of the day. Then, reluctantly, Digger Holt went to talk to Sheriff Pangborn. He didn't know if the hole in the tracks had anything to do with the murder of Homer Gamache, but he thought he'd best tell what he knew, and let those who were paid for it do the sorting out.